Web streaming of 90.3 WPLN-FM is made possible by listener support and by Vanderbilt University Medical Center, the promise of discovery. Learn how you can support this service at NashvillePublicRadio.org.
Ireland, pledge now at WPLN.org. Sunny skies today here in Nashville, the high in the mid-90s. It's 89 degrees right now in Nashville at 11 o'clock.
From NPR and WBEZ Chicago, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Carl Castle.
And I'm Peter Sagal. It's months before the election, but it's already begun, which means that come November, we Americans will go to the polls and in a solemn exercise of democracy, choose between a heartless destroyer of lives or an ignorant socialist intent on wrecking America. We'll ask how we know that, plus musician Will Oldham plays our game, and Carl Castle finally decides to sell his collection of James Taylor cassettes.
Enough with the white guys with guitars.
We'll ask who's really fed up with sincere songsters. It's on our quiz coming up right after this hour's news.
From NPR News in Washington, I'm Noor Rahm. Local officials in Afghanistan say a NATO airstrike killed 8 people last night, a family with 6 children. The officials say the family was not connected to the Taliban. A coalition spokesman says NATO forces were conducting an operation against insurgents in the area, and an investigation is underway, but so far there's no evidence of civilian casualties. NATO officials also said today that 4 coalition service members were killed in separate roadside bombings yesterday. This brings to 166 the number of NATO deaths this year. International outrage is mounting over the killing of more than 90 people, dozens of them children, in central Syria over the weekend. NPR's Kelly McGevers reports the United Nations has confirmed the deaths, while the Syrian government denies its troops were involved.
World leaders are condemning the Syrian government for the attack on a village just north of the city of Homs in central Syria. Britain's foreign minister is calling for an emergency meeting of the UN Security Council. The violence started after protests erupted in the village on Friday. Residents say the Syrian army began shelling protesters, anti-government rebels fought back, and the army later bombarded mostly civilian areas while pro-government militias went door to door slaughtering people. The Syrian government has denied it was behind the attack. The Syrian state news agency said the violence was the work of terrorists. Today, in the central city of Hama, activists say the Syrian army is shelling another residential area in an anti-government stronghold. So far, they say 3 people have been killed. Kelly McEvers, NPR News, Beirut.
The Lloyd's of London insurance market is the latest to make plans in case the euro collapses. Larry Miller reports from London. The Lloyd's chief executive says it's reducing its exposure to the eurozone's troubled common currency.
If the euro collapses, Richard Ward says Lloyd's is prepared for losses on its $90 billion investment portfolio. Around a fifth is spread across eurozone countries. Ward says Lloyd's saw difficulties ahead and de-risked its asset portfolio with investments split equally into cash and corporate and government bonds, mostly in the U.S., Britain, Canada, and Australia. The Lloyd's chief admits he's quite worried about Europe and told London Sunday Telegraph the insurer will settle claims using a basket of different currencies. His comments come as the head of Deutsche Bank describes Greece as a failed state run by corrupt politicians. For NPR News, I'm Larry Miller in London.
Tropical storm warnings are posted for the Georgia coast as well as parts of South Carolina and Florida as Beryl approaches. It's a subtropical storm and expected to bring strong winds and heavy rain to the region. Meteorologists also predict some coastal flooding and dangerous surf conditions. It's expected to make landfall tonight. This is NPR News from Washington. Americans around the world are honoring the nation's war dead this Memorial Day weekend. In Europe, what is now rolling green farmland in rural Belgium was once one of the most bloody battlefields of World War II. Terry Schultz visited the Henri Chapelle American Cemetery, where thousands of U.S. service members are laid to rest, and faithfully honored not just for Memorial Day, but throughout the year.
Belgians learned from a very young age that Americans helped liberate their country in both world wars. Residents show up by the hundreds to Memorial Day ceremonies at three U.S. cemeteries that together hold the graves of almost 14,000 U.S. troops. Diane Pollard's father, Captain James Howard Hardy, is buried in Henri Chapelle. His grave is looked after by a Belgian woman and, since October, by an entire fourth grade class. Pollard is grateful.
I'll never be alone.
Local resident Regine Villers tends to three American graves. Her seven-year-old daughter is about to adopt one, too. Villers says it's important to pass on the tradition.
We have a duty of memory to these men. It's too important, and we cannot forget that.
For NPR News, I'm Terry Schultz in Brussels.
The Indianapolis 500 gets underway at this hour. The auto race is always held the day before Memorial Day. This year, most of the drivers are lesser known. Danica Patrick has turned to stock car racing, so James Hinchcliffe will be driving the GoDaddy car this year.
The diehards know that somebody else is driving it. The casual fan may have heard something about it, and the once-a-year race fan had no idea that Danica wasn't here anymore.
Hinchcliffe is one of three drivers for Andretti Autosport. Penske Racing also has three drivers, so it could be a competition between those two teams. I'm Nora Rahm, NPR News in Washington.
Support for NPR comes from the William T. Grant Foundation, supporting research to improve the lives of young people, online at wtgrantfoundation.org.
From NPR and WBEZ Chicago, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Carl Castle, and here's your host at the Chase Bank Auditorium in downtown Chicago, Peter Sagal.
Thank you, Carl. Thanks, everybody. We got a great show for you today. We really do. We got musician Will Oldham, better known as Bonnie Prince Billy. He's on later to tell us why all the cool kids like him. But first, great news. According to a new study, listeners to NPR News are better informed than people who get their news anywhere else. This is true. They asked everyone a series of questions about things, and NPR listeners got more of the questions right than, say, cable TV news watchers. Of course, the questions were a little slanted.
To the best of your knowledge, which wine pairs best with a Prius?
So, if you're feeling especially smart, why not give us a call and reap the reward, specifically Carl's voice on your voicemail. The number is 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, this is Kate Breen. I'm from Louisville, Kentucky.
Well, nice to talk to you, Kate. Louisville is a lovely place.
Yes, it is. I love it.
I'm glad to hear it.
Sounds like a tense kind of love.
It does. You sound very matter of fact. Are you being held hostage?
Yes, I am. Yes.
You are. What do you do there in Louisville?
I am a retired English teacher and librarian.
Okay.
So I do things that are
a whole easy. Audience full of retired English teachers.
Oh yeah. 90% of our audience, pretty much. Well, welcome to the show, Kate. Let me introduce you to our fabulous panel this week. First, say hello to a humorist and author, most recently of the book Don't Vote, It Just Encourages the Bastards. Mr. P.J. O'Rourke is here.
Hi, Kate.
Next, it's the host of the podcast Taking the World by Storm, Too Beautiful to Live, Mr. Luke Burbank.
Hey, Kate.
And lastly, a comedian who'll be performing June 9th at Anthology Restaurant in San Diego, Paula Poundstone. Kate, welcome to the show. You're going to start us off, of course, with Who's Carl This Time? Carl Castle is going to read you three quotes from the week's news. If you can correctly identify or explain just two of them, you will, of course, win our fabulous prize, Carl's voice on your home voicemail. Ready to go?
Yes.
Here is your first quote.
It's nauseating to the American public. Enough is enough.
Oh, that is Cory Booker.
Yes, it was Cory Booker, and do you that's very good. I'm just going to give you the point. I'm not even going to ask you what he was talking about. The answer was campaign ads. Do you remember this story? He was complaining about the ads that President Obama took out. Now, this is a series of ads that the Obama campaign has started online and on TV. They're called Romney Economics, and they interview people who lost their jobs after their companies were bought by Romney's firm. It's pretty heartrending stuff, although the scene where Romney himself steals the crutch from Tiny Tim. Maybe a little over the top, and Romney's like, hey, kid, I'm just forcing you to walk more efficiently. So that was that, and then the Romney campaign responded immediately with a video called Stories from the Obama Economy. This is set in Iowa, in which lots of unemployed people talk about how tough things are. It's really sad, all these desolate faces flashing across the screen, staring at their dried-out fields. And then Sally Struthers comes on and offers the viewers a chance to sponsor an Iowan. For just 10 cents a day, you can feed this unemployed 32-year-old IT guy from Cedar Rapids.
Did you see what happened, though, the next day? Cory Booker had to sort of walk that whole thing back.
He had to do a hostage video, basically.
It was so, I know, it was, you know, don't think that the White House doesn't have their ways, because right after he basically criticized their ad they took out about Romney, the next day he shows up and he goes, oh, no, those ads are fine. And what was weird was he had a cast on one arm.
Yeah. I mean, that vacant, faraway look. Yeah.
Who's Cory Booker?
Cory Booker, Paula.
You said that out loud.
No, she always does. That's why we like
said.
Paula.
Otherwise,
Cory Booker is the very charismatic mayor of Newark. He's a rising Democratic star.
He saved somebody.
Is he the one who pulled the lady out of the house?
He's the one who ditched his own security detail, dove into that burning house in Newark.
What do you have to do to get me to know you?
Pretty much now we know. But it's already, what if all ads on TV were like political ads? It'd be like, does Burger King really serve it your way? Or the way its corporate masters want? I'm Ronald McDonald, and I approve this message. Here is your next quote.
It opens the pod bay door without hesitation. So much nicer than Hal.
That was a tweet from a man named Elon Musk. Not a cent, but an entrepreneur. His company launched the first successful what ever by a private company this week.
Oh, a space rocket.
Yes, the space mission. Very good. This week, a rocket built. Very good, yes. A rocket designed, built, and launched by the private company SpaceX took off for the space station carrying non-essential items that no one would miss if the spaceship blew up. That was the plan. They didn't know if it was going to work, so they didn't want to put anything.
Eyeshadow.
Yeah. Exactly. No, they put in stuff like extra rations for the astronauts, fresh laundry, and Oprah's own TV network. That was in there.
Yeah, she's had it so rough.
I know.
When are things going to come together for that lady?
Yeah, I know.
No, this is very cool. I mean, it's great that it's working, but it is weird to see a spaceship, first of all, covered with ads. And it was annoying that the countdown was sponsored. It was like Pepsi 10, Doritos 9, Chevy 8, 7 Up.
You know,
price of progress.
SpaceX, as a matter of fact, was the first private company, not only the first private company to send something up to the that's going to dock with the space station, but they were the first private company to get a rocket in orbit.
Yes.
There have been satellites have been set up and so on, but they actually orbited the Earth with a space capsule kind of resembling the Gemini one. And you know what they sent in that space capsule on their first orbit of their first private orbit of the Earth?
What?
A wheel of brie. I am not kidding. This is actually true. They sent cheese into space.
Why did they do this?
Just because it seemed like a funny thing to do. You know? I mean, they had to send something up there in the capsule. You know?
I'm
telling you the honest truth.
How could they have sent a wheel of brie and the NPR people not know about it?
It seems like a major failure of this show.
Just imagining they sent brie and people are just staring up, praying for its safe return. Yeah. Terrible. All right, very good. Here, Kate, is your last quote.
Enough with the white guys with guitars.
That was Ms. Magazine, one of the many commentators who seemed unimpressed with the big season finale of what?
Oh, Glee?
Not Glee.
This
is perhaps the show that inspired Glee.
Smash?
No.
Pretty much my feeling about Glee.
This is the big one, the most popular show on TV, and they had their big singing competition that ended just this week.
Oh, American Idol.
American Idol, yes, very good. For the fifth time in a row, the viewers of the singing contest show gave the crown to a white guy with a guitar, assuring Philip Phillips, former pawn shop worker, will have the same stellar career as Lee DeWise and Taylor Hicks, whoever they are. Even though it's still the top show on TV, the ratings for the show are slipping. This was the least watched American Idol finale ever. Reasons include, first among them, maybe competition from other singing shows, like NBC's The Voice and CBS's hit Some Cruel Music Executive You've Never Heard Of Shatters the Dreams of Young People Between Laxative Ads. People miss the sheer cruelty of Simon Cowell, and the gimmicks are not helping. On this finale, this is true, two past contestants, I don't know if you saw this, actually one of them proposed marriage to the other on live TV.
Ew.
And that was very moving. And because this was American Idol, this is true, he worked in a sponsorship, a product placement. He said, quote, "With the help of David Webb Jewelry, I have a way to make our union last forever," unquote. They made the ring.
You know, it's almost like an American Idol proposal doesn't even mean anything anymore.
I know. And then even worse, the couple announced that they'd be consummating their marriage in a Craftmatic adjustable mattress. So. Carl, how did Kate do in our quiz?
Kate, you had three correct answers, so I'll be doing the message on your voicemail or answering machine.
Well done. Kate, thank you so much for playing.
All right, thank you.
Bye-bye. We want to remind everyone they can join us here most weeks at the Chase Bank Auditorium in downtown Chicago. For tickets and more information, you can go to WBEZ.org, or you can find a link at our website, waitwait.npr.org. Right now, panel, time for you to answer some questions about this week's news. Paula, a new report analyzing the language of Congress members of Congress, that is, finds they speak more and more like what?
Middle schoolers.
Yes, exactly right. Teenagers. The Sunlight Foundation, which sounds like more fun than it is, has found that members of Congress are using shorter sentences and shorter words than they used to, lowering the grade level of their speech patterns. Asked if it's true that Congress has been dumbing down the way it speaks, House Majority Leader Eric Cantor said, duh.
I think it was LOL.
Yeah.
And we all know it.
Totes, said Steny Hoyer.
So all the legislation have a little question mark at the end?
Yeah.
So it's the agriculture bill?
In any event, people expect the trend will continue. Congress will get dumber and dumber in their verbal discourse. House Speaker John Boehner said, "That's it. I'm changing my name before it's too late." Of course, by making that joke, I've proved it already is
too late.
The part that's hard to figure out about the story is why.
Well, part of it was the new rule that all statements have to be 140 characters or less.
Yes. Support for NPR comes from NPR stations and Esurance, an Allstate company, offering tools to help guide customers through the car insurance process from quote to claim. Learn more at esurance.com. Angie's List, with reviews on local contractors and doctors in 500 categories, with ratings based only on member feedback. Angie'sList.com, and to the National Association of Realtors, an advocate for home ownership. More at houselogic.com/homeownership. We'll be back in a minute with more of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me from NPR.
Shredding with some barbecue, feeling grand, like all those people down in Dixieland.
On the next Fresh Air, a concert and interview with one of the best jazz and blues singers around, Catherine Russell. Join us.
Weekdays at 11 a.m. and 7 p.m.
Ain't it grand?
Support for Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me on WPLN comes from WPLN Miss Listener members and from the Ryman, hosting the Springer Mountain Farms Bluegrass Nights, opening with Vince Gill June 21st and continuing every Thursday through July 26th. The series includes Chris Thiele, and Michael Daves and the Gibson Brothers, Ryman.com. It's 20 minutes after 11, 89 degrees in Nashville.
From NPR and WBEZ Chicago, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Carl Castle. We're playing this week with Luke Burbank, P.J. O'Rourke, and Paula Poundstone. And here again is your host at the Chase Bank Auditorium in downtown Chicago, Peter Sagal.
Thank you, Carl. Thank you so much. Right now it's time for the Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me Bluff the Listener game. Call 1-888-WAIT-WAIT to play our game in the air. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, this is Andy Keel from St. Louis, Missouri.
Hey, how are things in beautiful St. Louis?
I'm actually in Peru, Illinois right now on my way to visit a friend in Iowa for
the
weekend.
Ooh, talk about the good times.
That's great.
Think about how disappointed someone is when they realize they're in Peru, Illinois. That's the last time I use Orbit.
Where are the
Incas? No, it's great. No, it's cool. They've got a Machu Picchu made of popsicle sticks. Awesome. Welcome to the show, Andy. You are going to play the game in which you can try to tell truth from fiction. Carl, what is Andy's topic?
Call 1-800-CARL to rate my diction.
So you know it's all about customer service in business, even though it doesn't seem like it's all about customer service. Well, this week we read a story of someone going the extra mile to improve their product and keep consumers happy, but it wasn't the kind of person you expect to hear about doing that. Guess the true story, you'll win Carl's voice on your home answering machine. Ready to play?
I'm ready.
All right, first let's hear from Luke Burbank.
First dates can be tough. The small talk, the awkward pauses, the realization that the other person's online profile photo apparently dates from the early 1970s. And even when you think things went great, they might not be that into you. Well, Michael Stoller of Philadelphia decided he would crack the code of why first dates do and don't work by sending dating response forms to women he'd gone out with. So far, he sent 6 women the date survey email. He's received 2 responses. The survey contains such multiple choice and essay questions as, please rate Mike's outfit on a scale of 1 to 10, with a higher score associated with how much you wanted to take the outfit off. Another question references his physical appearance. Mike is very self-conscious about his hair. Does he have reason to be? Reaction to Stoller's unorthodox romantic data collection has been mostly negative, with one woman responding, Mike dresses like an old man and wears suspenders more than he should. Another woman said he had the manners of a 5-year-old. Stoller says the attention from all this has actually landed him a few new dates, and he insists, for the record, he is not creepy. Although if you found Mike creepy, please check box 2B.
A guy trying to improve his dating performance by having post-date questionnaires with his former dates. Your next story of someone listening to their customers comes from P.J. O'Rourke.
Italy's Red Brigades were behind scores of kidnappings, bombings, and murders in the 1970s. Italian public was appalled. Terrorist group was suppressed by authorities. But now the Red Brigades are back with a new twist, social media marketing campaign. Coupons are offered in return for attendance at anti-austerity riots, disorderly groupons, as it were. Discounts are available on ski masks, graffiti spray paint, tear gas, unguent, and instant Molotov cocktails, just to add gasoline. Site visitors are invited to post videos of sabotage and vandalism they've committed to protest capitalist exploitation. There's even a feature on the site that lets users vote on which people or institutions should be the target of Red Brigade attacks. The Red Brigades claim to be in the forefront of user-friendly radicalism. Their motto is the proletariat is the customer, and the customer is always left.
The Red Brigades, bunch of terrorists using social media to, you know, connect with their consumers. And your last story of a bold attempt to make things better from a customer service point of view comes from Paula Poundstone.
In the Tenderloin District of San Francisco, a panhandler who calls himself Bullfrog is looking for customer feedback. Most days, Bullfrog can be found appealing for funds from pedestrians on Kearney in the block between the Owl Bar and Tenderloin Liquors. There's a lot of guys out there needing help, says Bullfrog. I'm not better than them, but I do want to connect with the folks I put the ask on. I want it to be good for everybody, so I got a questionnaire. Bullfrog's questionnaire opens with a note. Hello, my name is Bullfrog, and I need your help. And it contains questions like, number 1, would you prefer to address me by my first name, Jonathan? Number two, are there times when you might give me $10 if I'd give you $9? Number three, would you prefer to pay by phone? Number four, are you more likely to spare some change if I shout A, Bible verses, B, government conspiracy theories, C, unflattering personal criticism, possibly focusing on your butt?
Okay. Somebody out there is trying to connect with their customers in a new way. Is it from Luke Burbank, a guy who wants to improve his dating by surveying his former dates? From P.J. O'Rourke, the Red Brigade, a terrorist organization trying to enter the 21st century using web interactivity? Or from Paula Poundstone, a panhandler in San Francisco's Tenderloin, giving questionnaires to the people he hits up for spare change? Which of these is the real story of unexpected customer service?
I think I'm going to go with Luke's story.
You're going to go with Luke's story. That's the guy who's surveying his dates. Any particular reason?
It sounds useful.
It does sound useful. It's innovative.
It's got you thinking, Andy, huh?
Well, we actually spoke to the person who instituted this program. Here he is.
I decided I'm going to make a survey, and it's going to kind of show a little bit of who I am, both my fun side and my neurotic appreciation of uncomfortable circumstances side.
That was Michael Stoller, the young man surveying his past dates, who, as far as we know, remains single. Congratulations, Andy. You got it right. You earned a point for Luke. You've won our prize. Carl Castle will record the greeting in your home answering machine. Well done, sir.
Thank you, Peter.
Thank you for playing. Well done. Bye-bye. And now the game where we ask accomplished people to accomplish far less interesting things. Will Oldham is, according to the New Yorker, one of the most celebrated singer-songwriters in the country. But chances are you haven't heard of him. This is mostly his fault because he does not record under his own name, but under a series of pseudonyms. His latest and most well-known is Bonnie Prince Billy. He's got a new CD out. He joins us now. Will Oldham, welcome to Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hello.
Hello. How are you?
I'm happy.
So I found about your music when a friend of mine who has exquisite taste sent me one of your CDs some years ago.
Okay.
And it's quite amazing if you haven't heard any of your music as Bonnie Prince Billy. We're trying to figure out a way to describe it. One description we came across is, quote, a fragile sort of warble frittering around haunted melodies in the American folk or country tradition, unquote.
That's very generous.
Do you go for that?
I go for what might move units.
Really? You're all about the sales. Your music is, let me put it this way, sad. For the most part. I mean, one of your big songs covered, in fact, by Johnny Cash was I See a Darkness.
And you're never sad?
I am when I listen to your CDs. No, I mean, is it? Do you accept that your music can be somewhat mournful at the very least?
I guess I get it out that way, or you know, it's a place to put those kinds of things.
Yeah, and by virtue of putting your sadness in songs, are you a happy-go-lucky person in real life?
There are those who would disagree with that.
Well, we saw a video. This must be the strangest thing I've seen in a little while. A video that you did for a Kanye West song.
Oh, yeah.
And it is Zach Galifianakis, the actor and comedian, lip-syncing the Kanye West song while driving a tractor. How in the world did you end up with Zach Galifianakis lip-syncing a Kanye West song in a video on a tractor?
I was looking for somewhere to spend a quiet weekend.
Yeah.
And he had said that I could take refuge at his farm one day, and I needed it so badly, and I called, and he said, please do, please come. And as I was on my way there, I called one last time before cell phone service dropped out, and I said, how do I get there? He said, Bubba, gave me the directions, and then said, oh, and we're going to shoot this Kanye West video here while you're here this weekend.
Does that sort of thing happen to you all the time?
Yeah, basically that sort of thing happens to me.
Pretty much. It's just, that's what it's like, oh, I'm going over to Zach's house. They're doing a Kanye West video again.
Yeah.
You also are in, of all things, R. Kelly's epic multi-part video, Trapped in the Closet. How in the world did that happen?
Were those women swooning?
Yes, they were. They're on the floor, dude.
For you, not for R. Kelly.
You have quoted, I've seen you quoted that R. Kelly is one of your musical heroes.
It's true.
Along with Merle Haggard, which I believe, and Leonard Cohen, which I can see.
Yeah.
But R. Kelly?
Yeah.
His music is not what I don't hear the similarity between your musics, as it were.
Yeah, it's probably more in the lifestyle.
For example, here are some lyrics from an R. Kelly song, and I want you to interpret them for us as a fellow artist.
All
why don't you do the first one, Carl?
Like Jurassic Park, I'm your sexosaurus, baby.
So, what's your interpretation of that lyric, Will Oldham?
We're born under the same star sign, and he has another great line in a song where he says, "Inside of your walls there will dwell a Capricorn," and it's the same kind of idea. He finds
okay.
good places to put animals.
Yeah, I feel like
we're talking about R. Kelly, right? R. This.
Yeah.
We have one more. We have one more R. Kelly lyric for you here.
All right.
We'd like you to respond to.
I like her. I like her. I like her. Wait, I like her too. I like her too. And her friend too. And her cousin too. And her sister. And her mother. And her big grandma.
Yeah. I was listening to a song of his called Be My Number Two, which... go anywhere with.
What a great title.
So...
I'm realizing... through this conversation, I want to thank you that I could be turning my back on the gifted career as a songwriter.
All right, one last thing, because I want to emphasize you have this reputation as this extraordinarily gifted, almost austere style musician doing this very heartfelt stuff in an uncompromising way, but you keep showing up in odd pop culture places. The last one I'll mention is... you play a gorilla trainer in the movie Jackass 3D.
Yeah.
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 So how did that happen? Did Johnny Knoxville just get in touch because he's a fan of your music? And
no, it was actually my dad was a fan of the Jackass movies, and he the first one, and he passed away, and I went to see the second one with a good friend of his with whom he'd seen the first one, and then there was a guy in town... who works on the Jackass movies, who was working on the third one. And I just thought, oh my goodness, you know, what a great, what better tribute to my father than to whatever they would force me to get into.
Yeah. And they were responsive to this?
Gorilla trainer suit.
Yeah, like, Dad, this shot to the sack is for you.
Yeah. Because he came out of that first one just saying, that was the worst movie I've ever seen. And I said, Dad, what was so terrible about it? And as he began to explain the movie, he was, you know, fairly soon in tears laughing. And I was like, now is that so bad, Dad? Is that so bad?
I've never heard a touching story that revolved around the movie Jackass 3D, but now...
Well, neither has anybody else.
No, you've done it.
Yeah, I don't
think you walked through the world with your eyes closed and your ears... covered.
It's true. I actually am a little humbled because I was all, ha, Jackass 3D, and you're like, well, here's this touching story, and I feel...
It's a beautiful movie.
It is. Well, Will Oldham, we are delighted to talk to you, and we've invited you here to play a game that this time we're calling...
You're the World's Oldest Virgin.
Oh.
So you sing mostly sad or mournful songs, interspersed with the occasional tragic one, and we were thinking... Who's the singer least like you? And of course, it would be Doris Day.
Oh.
So we're going to ask you three questions about Ms. Doris Day, this sweet-faced, sweet-voiced singer most famous in the 50s and 60s. If you answer two of them correctly or more, you win our prize for one of our listeners, Carl's voice on their voicemail. Carl, who is Will Oldham playing for?
Will is playing for Rick Felkins of Leander, Texas.
All right, ready to go?
Go, yeah, let's do it for Rick.
All right, for Rick, here's your first question. Doris Day was famous for playing mostly sweet, innocent heroines in a variety of movies, mostly comedies and dramas and musicals. But she could have changed her image by accepting one role she was offered but turned down. Was it A, the jaded prostitute in Clute, B, Mrs. Robinson in The Graduate, or C, the 50-foot woman in Attack of the 50-foot Woman?
I can shoot. I can go right in, right?
Go for it.
I think it was maybe Mrs. Robinson.
You're right. It was Mrs. Robinson. Doris Day was offered the role. Mrs. Robinson in The Graduate. She turned it down for moral reasons.
She turned it down for a life with, you know, 40 cats or something like that.
This is true. She is now an animal lover and an animal patron. But let's move on to the next question. Ms. Day quit movies in around 1968. She started doing TV instead with the launch of the Doris Day Show, a sitcom. Why did she go from movies to TV? Was it A, Alfred Hitchcock blackballed her from film after she refused his advances? B, after her husband died, she found out he had signed her up to do a TV series without her knowledge? Or C, she went to a screening of her last film and shouted, "Oh my God, my pores are like sinkholes up there."
Huh.
And didn't want to be in the movies anymore.
I'm afraid I like the pores story, and I have to go with it just because I like it, not because it's true.
Following your muse. Yeah, it's not true, but it is funny. No, what happened was is that in 1968, her husband died, and she found out first that she was deeply in debt because he had lost all her money, and secondly, he signed her up to do a TV show, so she felt obligated.
I've stepped one step closer to the precipice of losing for Rick.
But here we are. You can still have a chance, because if you get this last one right, of course, you will win. So she did this sitcom, The Doris Day Show, and it ran for 5 years. And there was something unusual about it. Was it A, every week a new stray animal played Doris Day's pet and viewers were then encouraged to adopt it? B, every season the basic premise of the sitcom completely changed? Or C, instead of a laugh track, it would flash the words "laugh now" on the screen after every joke?
I'm going to say B.
You're going to say B, that the premise changed every season?
Yeah.
You're right. That's what happened. It was never explained. The first season, she's a single mom with two young kids living on a ranch in Northern California. By the fifth season, she was a swinging single in 1970s San Francisco working for a magazine. They never explained what happened to the kids.
Hey, Doris, you were right. All the questions were about you.
Carl, how did Will Oldham do in our quiz?
Will, you had two correct answers, and that's good enough to win for Rick Felkins. Congratulations.
Yeah. Well done, yes.
Right.
Will Oldham's new book is Will Oldham on Bonnie Prince Billy. His latest album as Bonnie Prince Billy is Wolf Roy Goes to Town. Will Oldham, thank you so much for joining us. Great to talk to you.
Well, thanks for having me.
Bye-bye.
Quail and dumplings now. As our bosom friends, we got empty tummies, but it won't always be. One day it's gonna be quail and dumplings for we.
In just a minute, Carl can't eat just one. In a tasty listener limerick challenge, call 1-888-WAIT-WAIT to join us on the air. Support for NPR comes from NPR stations and Progressive Insurance, with insurance for cars, boats, motorcycles, RVs, and commercial vehicles at 1-800-PROGRESSIVE and progressive.com. The Wallace Foundation, a source of ideas for improving education and enrichment for children, both in and out of school at wallacefoundation.org. And Pimsleur Language Programs, offering the potential to play the Bluff the Listener Challenge in 45 languages. Learn more at Pimsleur.com. We'll be back in a minute with more of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me from NPR.
I'm Robin Young. Join us next time for the news and these stories here and now. We'll have the latest from Egypt days after voters cast ballots in the historic presidential election. Also, Memorial Day reflections on the Vietnam Veterans Memorial, the Wall. It's being rededicated on Monday, and Jan Scruggs, the man who started it all, will remind us why it's so important. That's Public Radio's Daily Digest of News and Culture, here and now.
Weekdays at noon.
You're listening to Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, here on 90.3 WPLN, Nashville Public Radio. The time is 11:38, and it's 90 degrees in Nashville.
From NPR and WBEZ Chicago, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Carl Castle. We're playing this week with P.J. O'Rourke, Paula Poundstone, and Luke Burbank. And here again is your host at the Chase Bank Auditorium in downtown Chicago, Peter Sagal.
Thank you, Carl. Thank you, everybody. In just a minute, Carl will fire up the Limerick barbecue and grill some portobello mush rhymes.
Ew.
It's vegan. You'll like it. If you'd like to play, give us a call at 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. Right now, panel, some more questions for you from the week's news. PJ, a new study suggests that doing what can lead to immoral behavior?
Oh, I know all about this.
I know you do. That's why we directed this question to you, sir.
Yeah, drink.
Yes, they just figured that out. It's why the people in, like, the Whole Foods parking lot are so vicious about stealing your parking space.
Eating organic food?
Yes, eating organic food can make you immoral, according to a new study.
Peter, get out of here. I'm sorry. You know, I dislike vegans as much as the next person. But they're nothing compared to drunks.
Wait, Peter, who did this study?
A scientist did it, Paula, and this is what the scientist did.
Who made him a scientist? Did he just...
Did he find that badge?
He had a white lab coat. I wasn't going to ask for a diploma.
If he had a white coat, he might have been an ice cream man.
You never know. But look, there are listeners right out there right now who are wondering why they ended up eating, you know, organic strawberries and shooting a guy, and I can explain.
All right, okay. So
we're not letting you.
I know.
I'm there.
All right, well, we're going to explain. So they took these groups of people. And they didn't even feed them organic food. They showed them pictures of packages of organic food. Some people were shown organic products. Some people were shown regular junk food or normal food. And then those same people were given quizzes and questioned about various things that were to ascertain their level of sort of moral turpitude.
Well, if you sat me down and showed me a bunch of pictures of organic food, I'd punch you too.
Well,
what a thing to do to somebody.
So what they determined was that there's something about organic food that makes people feel virtuous simply by virtue of experiencing it or having it. So therefore they feel they can get away with something bad because they've already done something virtuous. You see?
Well, that's where Democrats come from. I don't see what it has to do with organic food.
Did you know the other part of this study, Peter, which was that some of the people were shown foods that were labeled as organic. Some people were shown stuff that wasn't organic, but it was, you know, like relatively rice, kind of innocuous stuff. And then some people were shown like brownies and things that were called comfort food. And I think we're burying the lead here because the people who looked at the comfort food were nicer.
Yes.
They were less judgy. They were just in their own shame spiral.
Exactly.
From like looking at brownies. That they weren't judging anyone else, which, you know...
I must make up for my disgrace by looking at this brownie by helping this person in need.
Yes, which I...
Well, the people who had the organic kale were like, let the bastard die. What do I do?
Yes.
Paula, a new review of shipwrecks, records of shipwrecks, since the Titanic, shows that along with not having enough lifeboats and playing chicken with icebergs, sailors around the world also immediately gave up what idea after that tragedy?
Of going down with the ship.
Pretty much, yes. What they gave up was women and children first. Look, men tried to be chivalrous on the Titanic, and where did it get them? It got them to the bottom of the ocean. Or, best case scenario, in Aunt Millie's spare dress. So here's the problem, though. So everybody heard about women and children first on the Titanic. It was really one of the only times it was ever put in place. So in a shipwreck, you can imagine, later on, 10, however many years later, ship's going down, the women and children are like, this is great, we're going to go first. And the ship's crew is like, all right, of course we're going to board the lifeboats, women and children first, but first we have some pre-boarding. We'd like our silver and platinum passengers, plus any men on board. We invite them to pre-board at this time. Also, if there are any families of men who need extra time... If you have any luggage like a Y chromosome, please. PJ, thanks to a scientist at MIT, one of life's great struggles has finally been solved. The scientist has figured out how to increase the speed of what?
No, I need a little hint there.
The study was done in conjunction with the Heinz 57 Institute.
Speed of ketchup.
Yes, yeah. The speed of ketchup. Getting ketchup out of the bottle. He has managed to solve that problem.
You got to go to MIT out. You know what you do? You take the ketchup, you put it in one of those little plastic squeeze bottles. You can get ketchup that goes 70 miles an hour. Just lay it on the table and go, wham!
But it's still stuck inside the. I think this is really a contribution.
Well, let me explain. So MIT researcher. And let's be honest, America's greatest hero, Dave Smith, has invented a substance that makes the inside of a ketchup bottle almost frictionless. So the ketchup speeds right out of there. It is called Liquiglide. Dr. Smith is not the slightest bit embarrassed about that.
Nothing gross here.
Nothing gross here.
Guy's at MIT and he never saw a squirt bottle of ketchup, you know? I mean, like, these people don't get out enough.
The squirt bottle does not solve the problem of what we call the shy ketchup.
Explain, Paula.
Well, you know what does? Well, you know what does solve this, and you don't have to go to MIT to figure this out. It's a larger cap on the ketchup bottle.
Yeah, but then see what happens is yes, I think you're probably right, but the way the ketchup bottle is currently shaped, you can't get a knife all the way. You can't get up under the eaves of shoulders
it's
of
important.
The bottle to
yeah.
get the shy ketchup.
The shy ketchup.
So you think that the ketchup just doesn't have a lot of confidence?
Yeah, we always call it that. When something won't come out in our house, it's shy.
It's shy. Never mind.
Coming up, it's Lightning Fill in the Blank, but first it's the game where you have to listen for the rhyme. If you'd like to play on air, call or leave a message at 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. You can click the Contact Us link on our website, waitwait.npr.org. There you can find out about attending our weekly live shows here at the Chase Bank Auditorium in Chicago and our upcoming show in Cleveland, Ohio this June. Also, check out the latest How to Do Everything podcast. This week, Ian and Mike tell you how to make your own ketchup without any tomatoes.
Take that, Heinz.
Hi, you're on Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, Peter. This is Vera Komisarzewski calling from Portland, Maine.
Vera, excuse me, what?
Komisarzewski.
Oh, wow, that is a fabulous and operatic name. What do you do there in Portland?
I'm a nurse practitioner in an emergency room.
Oh, wow, that must be exciting work.
Yeah, it provides endless dinner party stories.
Really?
Yeah.
Is that legal?
The names are all changed.
You wouldn't believe what I pulled out of this one guy. Well, welcome to the show, Vera. Carl Castle is going to read you three news-related limericks with the last word or phrase missing from each. If you can fill in that last word or phrase correctly, and two of the limericks will be a big winner. Ready to go?
Yep, I am.
Here's your first limerick.
A flat iron cut just sounds fake. A name change does not new food make. But a fresh cut of meat that cannot be beat. Come try the Las Vegas Strip.
Steak?
Yes, steak. A meat scientist in Oklahoma has discovered a never-before-known cut of steak. He's calling it the Vegas Strip steak. Until they get the official patent, no one is saying where on the cow this new steak is found. All we know is that it's from an area traditionally used to make hamburger, and it's not to be confused with the Vegas stripper steak. That's the steak that's just trying to pay its way through grad school.
How many years of cowdom have we had now? About 10,000 since they were domesticated. Do you think people had kind of like poked around and pretty much looked at every corner?
Yeah,
of the,
you'd think.
There's some shy parts of it.
There's some shy parts of it.
All right, very good. Here is your next limit.
You ladies just can't come to grips with our munchy testosterone dips. At a rough all-male party, the ruffles are hearty. We're feeding our manhood with
chips.
Yes, chips. Finally, potato chips for men. Stand back, ladies. Ruffles has unleashed new ultimate chips aimed at men. What makes them manly? Well, they're twice the size of a regular chip. And also, they refuse to share their feelings. Best of all, though, is the secret ingredient in the manly chips, shrapnel. Here is your last limerick.
Though I don't end up in the news, my feet give this country its dues. If they're not pre-worn, her feet might get corns. I break in Her Majesty's...
shoes.
Yes! Queen Elizabeth of England walks around a lot, shaking hands, which is why it was revealed this week. The Queen needs a special servant just to wear her shoes for a while to break them in first. If she's got a servant to do that, is there anything left for the Queen to actually do herself? Asked for comment, the Queen couldn't answer because the guy who moves her jaw up and down was on a break. Carl, how did Vera do in our quiz?
Vera had a perfect score, Peter. Three correct answers. So, Vera, you win our prize.
Well done, Vera.
Thank you.
Congratulations.
Thank you so much.
And we'll see you in Portland. We'll be there this summer.
I'll be there.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Thanks. Bye.
Now on to our final game, Lightning Fill in the Blank. Each of our players will have 60 seconds in which to answer as many fill-in-the-blank questions as he or she can. Each correct answer is now worth 2 points. Carl, can you give us the scores?
We have a tie for first place, Peter. Luke Burbank and Paula Poundstone both have 3 points. P.J. O'Rourke has 2.
All right. P.J., you are in last place. That means you're up first. The clock will start when you begin your first question. Fill in the blank. The doctor in Pakistan who helped the CIA track down blank was sentenced to 33 years in prison on Wednesday.
Yeah.
Track down blank.
Oh, Osama bin Laden.
Right. The same week that world powers met to discuss its nuclear program, blank launched a small satellite into orbit.
Iran.
Yes. As part of a multi-year turnaround plan, computer company blank announced it will be laying off 27,000 people. Yes. Couch potatoes mourned this week's death of Eugene Polly, the inventor of the blank.
The remote control.
Yes. And what police described as an epic battle, a man and woman in Seattle fought for 30 minutes armed with blank.
Remote controls.
No. Pooper scoopers.
They had a dispute. I like it better my way.
They had a dispute. The guy swung his pooper scooper at the woman in the dog park. She fended him off with her pooper scooper, and they went at it in a duel back and forth.
This was Seattle.
Yes.
The lady should not have said that to me about my dog.
Carl, how did PJ do in our quiz?
PJ had 6 correct answers for 12 more points. He now has 14 points, and PJ has the lead.
Well done, PJ. All right. We have flipped a coin. Paul is elected to go last, so Luke, you're up next. During the first hearing on the matter, senators grilled the head of the blank over the prostitution scandal.
Secret Service.
Yes. Mitt Romney slammed President Obama's education policy and said he favors a blank program.
Failed.
A voucher
program.
Not yet.
You've got to give him, time.
A voucher program. Police charged a man in Dubuque, Iowa with a DUI after they caught him outside a bar with blank.
A zebra and a parrot.
In the front seat of his truck. Well done. A glut of climbers may have been the cause of the unusual number of fatalities on blank last weekend.
Mount Everest.
Yes. With his win in the Preakness last Sunday, I'll Have Another is one race away from winning the blank.
Triple crown.
Yes. The Defense Department revealed this week that the new state-of-the-art detention facility it uses in Afghanistan isn't perfect because blank.
They got it from IKEA.
Because the cell doors don't lock. The U.S. may never leave Afghanistan, but dangerous prisoners, you are now free to move about the country. According to the Defense Department, the cells at Parwan Detention Facility have locks that are, quote, incapable of locking, which according to the way words work, means they are not locks.
I mean, in fairness, have you tried to put together a detention center from IKEA?
The directions are in Swedish.
Impossible.
Yeah.
Carl, how did Luke do in our quiz?
Luke had 4 correct answers for 8 more points. He now has 11 points. But PJ still has the lead with 14.
All right. So how many then does Paula need to take it away from him and win?
6 correct answers.
All right, Paula, you up for it?
I'm really feeling stressed out.
Didn't you win the last time you were on the show?
I won the time before that. And then the last time I won and I got all my lightning round questions. You ran out of questions, and then we waited quietly for the timer.
Wow. All right. Let's see if you can keep the streak going, Paula. Here we go.
Feeling.
This is for the game.
Fill in the blank. Just days after its IPO, angry shareholders sued social networking site blank for violating securities laws.
Facebook.
Yes. 15 months after ousting Hosni Mubarak, people in blank lined up to vote in their first free elections.
Egypt.
Right. Arizona's Secretary of State said Wednesday that Hawaii's verification of blank's birth certificate meets necessary standards and will be on the ballot.
Obama.
Yes. Best known for hits like Stayin' Alive, Robin Gibb of the group The Blank died last Sunday at age 62.
The Bee Gees.
Yes. The LBJ School of Public Affairs apologized for a typo on its commencement program that called the school blank.
They put LBJ School of Public Affairs.
Yes, they did. Football star Donald Driver was the surprise winner this week in the TV show Blank.
In Dancing with the Stars.
Yes, indeed. Wired reported this week that IBM employees are banned from using blank over fears that she would be spying.
Siri.
Siri, yes, that's it. Oh. Siri, yeah. Can't use Siri.
I thought police, it was a guy.
No, police investigating a stolen van in Georgia discovered it was blank.
It was full of monkeys.
No, it was not stolen at all. It was just hidden by weeds in the front yard. It was hidden by weeds. This 1973 Chevy was sitting out there, been sitting out for a while. The weeds grew around. One day the lady looked out and said, "Oh my gosh, my truck's gone." She called the police. They came, some detective work. They found it. The police also told her that her husband, whom she had reported missing some years ago, was disguised as an old man sitting in her kitchen. Carl, did Paula do well enough to win?
Paula needed 6 correct answers to win. She had 7 correct answers.
Oh, my God.
It's a streak. Paula Poundstone is this week's champion.
It's a streak.
Good work.
Thank you very much.
Well done. Now, listen, in a recent speech, Mitt Romney said that there was a list of words that he's not allowed to say. In just a minute, we're going to ask our panelists to predict what those words are. But first, let me tell you, the support for NPR comes from NPR stations and the National Association of Realtors, an advocate for homeownership, more at houselogic.com/homeownership. The Pew Charitable Trusts, driven by the power of knowledge to solve today's most challenging problems at pewtrusts.org, and the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, dedicated to the idea that all people deserve the chance to live healthy, productive lives at gatesfoundation.org. Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is a production of NPR and WBEZ Chicago in association with Urgent Haircut Productions, Doug Berman, Benevolent Overlord, Philip Goedeker writes our limericks, our house manager is Don Hall, our assistant house manager is Jessica McLeod, our web guru is Beth Novi, engineers include Les Dolarchik and Muhammad Mao. Thanks to John Zajac at Chase Bank. BJ Lederman composed our theme. Our program is produced by Eva Walchover and Emily Ecton. Technical direction is from Lorna White. Production coordinator is Robert Newhouse. Our senior producer is Mr. Ian Chillog, the executive producer. Oh, wait, wait, don't tell me. Is Mr. Michael Danforth. Also, this week, we say goodbye to our intern, Kate Casey. Kate, you towered over us in intelligence and also in physical height. She's pretty tall. Good luck, Kate. Now, panel, what is Mitt Romney not allowed to say? What's on his list? Luke Burbank.
Romney bought 4,000 engaged self-destruct sequence.
PJ O'Rourke.
I think it'd probably be the presidential inauguration address.
And Paula Poundstone.
And if Mitt Romney says any of those things, panel, we'll ask you about it on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell
Thank
Me.
You, Carl Castle. Thanks also to Paula Poundstone, T.J. O'Rourke, Luke Burbank. Thanks all of you for listening. You've been fabulous. We'll see you next week. This is NPR.
You've been listening to What Do You Know? The Right Way, Don't Tell Me, here on 90.3 WPLN Nashville Public Radio, 91.5 WTML Tullahoma, 91.7 WHRS Cookeville. You can find a complete schedule of all of our programs and listen to a live stream of any of our program channels at WPLN.org. Support for our programming is made possible in part by WPLN listener members. Please support the programming and information you value on WPLN by making a contribution during our summer e-pledge. Plus, you'll have a chance to win a trip for two to Ireland. You can pledge now at WPLN.org.
Chris Farris earned 7 Bronze Stars while serving with the Army's elite Delta Force. His wife told USA Today that combat, emotional distance, and all that time away nearly destroyed their marriage.
You teach them how to be soldiers, but how do you be a father and how do you be a husband?
I'm Neil Conan. Lessons from a Military Marriage. Chris and Lisa Farris join us Memorial Day on Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
Weekday afternoons from 1 until 3.
Next time on The World, checking in with a veteran who came back from Iraq in pretty good shape. He was wounded, but did not apply for a Purple Heart.
Turns out that some guy in the Abu Ghraib section of Baghdad fired his pistol. It came through the city, over the berm, into the base, and into my backside.
One veteran tells his story next time on The World.
Weeknights at 9 o'clock. Lipscomb University hosts the Christian Scholars Conference June 7th through 9th. Plenary sessions by Cutting for Stone author Abraham Verghese, theologian Miroslav Volf,